The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com. Welcome to the podcast. This is Molly.
And I'm Kristen.
And Kristen, there's been a lot in the news lately about the green economy. The green economy is going to save us, get us out of this trouble, keep the world from ending. Like, the green economy is paramount.
Yeah, exactly. It's by green economy, you mean all of the industries surrounding green products, such as building solar panels, or nuclear power plants, et cetera, et cetera.
Renewable resources.
Yeah, this has become a huge industry. According to an article I read in the New York Times a couple weeks ago, I think 28 states have already set quotas for having renewable sources of energy. Mm-hmm. And billions of dollars are now being poured into this industry. And lobbyists are just knocking down the doors of congressmen trying to get their piece of the renewable energy pie.
But you know, there's pretty much nothing a president can do without garnering criticism. And one of the criticisms that's been lobbied at this new green economy, the formation of green jobs, is that women are not going to be adequately represented, that the jobs that are in the green economy are primarily construction jobs, the kinds of jobs that women just stay away from.
Right, Molly. There are some initiatives going on right now to, first of all, train more women to be able to contribute to the green economy and get these so-called green-collar jobs. And also people who are trying to think of more ways to include more female-dominated industries. Because like you said, a lot of these engineering and technological industry sectors that make up a lot of the green economy are comprised mostly of men.
Mm-hmm. And it's especially important because, you know, researchers think that the green economy jobs, like most construction jobs, are going to pay a lot more. Like, this is a really good opportunity for women to get in, make some higher wages. So one of the steps that's being taken, especially on college campuses I've been reading, is just an education program. Like, here are green jobs. Here's how you get them. Because, you know, green's become such a cliche. We all think we know what it means, but what does it mean in our own lives?
Right. I gotta say, you know, when you think about sustainable resources, renewable energy, it's not something that is constantly on my mind. I mean, do I feel good about taking the train to work instead of having to drive my car 5 miles? Absolutely. But it's not something that really impacts my day-to-day life. And since, like you said, green has become kind of a cliche, it's just sort of something where you pat yourself on the back when you go buy a reusable grocery bag and things like that. And I thought it would be interesting to take a different view of what renewable resources mean for women, especially outside of the United States, because it is linked to a lot of other huge issues, right?
Right. I mean, we primarily think about renewable resources in terms of our pocketbooks, like can we afford to put solar panels on a house? But in the developing countries, climate change, renewable resources, gender inequality, and poverty are all inextricably linked in really interesting ways. So we thought this would be a really good food for thought about how we can think about renewable resources and women all around the world in a united way.
Yeah, and keep in mind, this is Molly and I are going to kind of give a high-level view of women in developing countries especially, and the impact of renewable resources. We're going to throw in a few specific examples, but
Kristen's right. We're not going to have time to do country by country how every single set of women's affected. So we're going to give a high-level overview. First, though, Kristen, the question at hand, what is a renewable resource?
Renewable resource is it's pretty self-explanatory, Molly. It is a resource, a source of energy, if you will, that is, can be replenished naturally. And by that, I mean solar energy. The sun is there. It is going to continue to give us energy for a long time. There is wind. There is tidal wave energy. All of these things that do not, that don't have a finite limit, such as fossil fuels.
True. There are also not just renewable energy sources, but renewable materials. For example, you can farm in a way that's sustainable, sustainable agriculture. Forest products, lumber, plywood, paper, they can all be renewable resources when you produce them with sustainable forestry techniques. So it's really a combination of these products and energy sources that affect women in the developing world. Let's take water, okay? In the developing world, water, obviously, a paramount necessary resource. Mm-hmm. Guess who spends all the time gathering water, carting it back and forth?
I'm going to guess women and girls.
Yes, you are correct. So studies have been done that show that in the developing world, women have the most knowledge about how water needs to be sort of delivered to a village, how it works for them. But their opinion is often overlooked when parties are coming in and trying to design new systems for these people so that they eventually put in things that don't work. I've got an example of that real quick for you, Kristen. There was this project in Nepal, and the women, they put in this new tap, but the women didn't like it because the stands were like right on the roadside, mm-hmm. which didn't fit their needs at all because they need to like have room to wash clothes, bathe, and as a result, they didn't even use this new tap that was put in. They were going even farther to find more water sources.
Right. Sounds like the people who were designing these tabs weren't going to the primary stakeholders, if you will. You like that?
Yeah.
To find out the optimum place to put it. And Molly, when we think about renewable resources, to me, sometimes it just seems like such an individual subject. It's just the environment. We're just talking about the earth, but in the developing world, especially, you know, there's such a complex interplay of all of these different factors that you were talking about just in that one example in Nepal. There's a source from Canadian Women's Studies that says that eradicating poverty, expanding income earning possibilities, increasing gender equity, improving education and health status, and protecting and regenerating the environment are all related to equitable access to energy, like you were talking about, like just being able to go and get the water, clean, safe water, and bringing it back. Something as simple as that. We don't think of education, healthcare, and all of those other factors all being combined with this one issue. And it's something that a lot of NGOs and nonprofits are looking to tackle, kind of kill two birds with one stone, if you will. They're trying to tackle this renewable resource problem and also at the same time creating more gender equality in these communities and adding more social equality for these women.
Yeah, that's pretty a powerful way to think about it, that just, you know, by doing something we need to do anyway to keep our earth in viable shape, we can, you know, knock out a lot of this poverty. We were looking at some UN reports that 70% of the 1.3 billion people living in conditions of poverty are women. And so that's sort of why they're not on this equal level. There's obviously a lot of cultural, social norms playing into it. Just to continue with this water example, you know, if you're not spending your entire day walking to find a clean, renewable source of water, then you'll have more time to take care of your family. It raises health rates. You have more time for education. And you can really start to break this cycle of poverty.
Exactly. And you were talking about these studies that are coming out of the UN. And this whole issue of gender equality and renewable resources is actually part of some of the millennial development goals that the UN has established. The Millennium Declaration states that gender equality is both a goal in and of itself and a condition to combat poverty, hunger, and disease and achieve all of these other goals like you were talking about. You know, if you solve one of these problems of just say water or having to go collect firewood for fuel, then you can target all of these other goals as well. And I thought it'd be nice to toss in one of these examples of success that the UN used, and it is of women in Nigeria who are able to collectively come together and actually effectively shut down a natural gas company in the country that was just burning all this natural gas. There were all these natural gas flares coming out of the ground, and it was really dangerous for these women having to go back and forth. And they were able to really come together, both in Nigeria and then abroad, I think in the UK. And with all of their collective actions, they were able to lobby strong enough to get the parent company of the natural gas affiliate to shut down. Mm-hmm. And so the thing is, it is possible. Like, it sounds kind of pie in the sky for us to say, oh, well, let's put a water tap in the right place and, you know, solve the world's problems. But in fact, it can make a huge difference, because now that these women have seen probably that they can come together as a cohesive unit and enact change, probably gives them a little more power in their own communities as well.
And it's more than just water. I mean, these women are basically creating food for entire populations.
Exactly. According to, once again, going back to this, the United Nations Millennial Development Goals, it states that rural women in less developed countries are the principal basic food producers. So they're the ones who are out in the fields tending a lot of these crops that are going back and feeding the men and children. And so if these women don't have as much access to information about, let's just say, like incoming storm patterns and droughts and things like that, that are going to directly impact the crop production, it's going to have a ripple effect in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's yet another reason why creating these, bring more access to renewable resources and energy to create more sustainable agricultural practices are going to be so important specifically for these women.
Right. And you were talking about not having that knowledge, not being able to walk around just because, you know, a culture dictates that you kind of stay close to home. You can't get the information. That can have really damaging effects in terms of how climate change affects women. Women are actually the population that can be most affected by that drought or by something like a tsunami that rips through a village as a result of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
We were reading about tsunami in Sri Lanka, and because the women are never taught how to climb a tree the way that boys are, many of them perish because they couldn't get away from the rising tides.
Right. And then when you have these natural disasters, or even rampant disease that might break out in communities, the women are the ones who are going to be, taking care of the children and the men who are most affected mm-hmm. by it. And then you have issues like in Nepal, women suffer from bladder problems associated with carrying large amounts of firewood after they become pregnant, because they're having to go farther and farther distances, you know, when you use more and more firewood.
So basically, sort of, I guess the takeaway that would be awful nice if everyone would just sort of ask the women where they're coming in to create programs for them about what exactly would serve them. But right now, a lot of these programs are very gender blind. So that's why we got organizations like IUCN and the UN going in trying to figure out how they can have a two-pronged approach to this problem of gender inequality and climate change and renewable resources.
Right. There's also an organization, Molly, that was started up fairly recently called Energia, looks mm-hmm. like Energia, that is totally devoted to looking at the link between these gender issues we were talking about and renewable resources, and finding out how to approach them and solve them as well. So there's a lot going on. I was really surprised when we were thinking about talking about renewable resources and how it might affect women to find out that there's this whole other segment of it that we just really don't think about.
We don't think about it, but you know, the problem I had when we were researching this, Kristen, was just how hard it was to kind of wrap my head around it. It seems like such a huge problem. You know, on its own, renewable resources seem like, you know, just this huge mountain to climb. Then when you add developing world on top of that, it seems monumental. Gender inequality seems monumental. And it becomes so frustrating, I think, with all these individual examples. But then I was thinking about this movie that we saw a few months ago called A Powerful Noise, which was about how women in developing countries have sort of, you know, it gave a few examples of how women have been able to rise up, create some better quality, create some income for themselves, and how that sort of impacts their entire community. And one thing we walked away from that movie with was the importance of microloans. And so that to me is one way that we can all take sort of, you know, a concrete approach to solving this problem for ourselves.
Right. And the movie that you were referencing, I think we should say, was produced by the organization CARE, which focuses on poverty and women. And research continually shows over and over again in developing countries, the people who you should target if you want to create change in those societies are the women, because they're the ones who are taking care of the children. They're responsible for the education, for the healthcare, for going and getting the food, for even growing the food and bringing it back. And, they've made huge strides. And, even in the example that I mentioned earlier about the Nigerian women, there's a lot that can be done. It seems overwhelming. There have just been some really heartening examples recently, as you know, in that movie that we saw, and in this UN literature that we've been reading about how women are really taking advantage of those assets that they have in their communities and using it to improve the lives of their children and their husbands and their families. Right. So I think at the end of the day, it is an overwhelming problem, but there is definitely a silver lining to it.
Yeah, and I think that if, you know, you want to look for a way where you yourself can make a concrete difference in this whole big issue, a microloan is something to consider instead of, you know, another reusable grocery bag.
Yeah. Check out microloans. Molly and I, we should maybe do a podcast on microloans sometime.
Perhaps we shall.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks so much for listening to us talk about renewable resources. If you want to learn more about them, HowStuffWorks.com has a whole section on green science, so you can read to your heart's content about that. And Molly and I actually have a new blog on HowStuffWorks.com. It's called How To Stuff, where we tell you how to do stuff. If there's anything that you would like to learn how to do that has just been just plaguing you and you can't figure out how to do it, please send me and Molly an email and we will maybe tackle that problem for you on the blog to the best of our ability. And of course, as always, if you have any questions or comments for me and or Molly, send
especially
us.
Especially
Molly. So yeah, just shoot us an email. Simple address. It's momstuff at howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.